Science worked out itself a job by having successfully solved the physical part of the economic problems. Science is not needed for this anymore. Furthermore, the solution of these problems, important as this solution appeared to us, was not an unmitigated blessing. People are deprived of an objective which has motivated them in the past and the accomplishment of which gave them satisfaction, the honest earning of a decent living. This comes too easily now. It is not a purpose necessary to thoroughly strive for anymore, and it comes so easily as a result, mostly as a result of the accomplishments of science and technology. This is a bitter pill for us scientists to swallow. We have striven for this situation through many, many years, and when we have accomplished it, it has many fine points, but it has also its weaknesses. I think I have now summarized the crisis of science and described it. Let me just very quickly summarize what I tried to say. The internal problem of science is its specialization, the difficulty to go to the frontier, to be at the frontier with so many other people also at the frontier and to contribute significantly to the progress of human knowledge. The second difficulty is that the economic problem has been solved and that is not a valid objective anymore. As I also said, and I will repeat it, this should not divert attention from science's great accomplishments, because after all, it is good that people do not go hungry anymore. It is good that the Mexican wheat of Burlaug produces 3 times more wheat in India per acre and year than the old wheats produced, so that the feeding of people and the hunger has been largely abolished. But I would like now to come to the second subject which I wanted to talk to you about, namely how could we overcome of these problems and in what way I feel could we change a little bit the attitude of science to cope with these problems. Now, what I am going to say, what I was saying before, was intended to be an analysis of the problem. Now, what I am going to say now is even more questionable because it is a proposal of what direction we should strive for, what we should try to do to restore the vitality, the importance, the charm of science that it should have and that we want it to have. Well, how could we overcome the inner problems of science, the specialization, and the difficulty to learn, even in a narrow area, what has been produced before? The way it seems to me is to extend our interest further, to extend it from the inanimate area to the area of life. This is being done, of course, to a very considerable degree by the biologists, but mainly, though perhaps not entirely exclusively, in the area bordering on the inanimate, in the area of microbes and bacteria. But if there were no other indications, modern physics, quantum mechanics, epistemology of quantum mechanics would already teach us that this is not enough, that the quantum laws of nature strongly suggest to extend our interest to the problems of consciousness, to the true problems of life. whether my belief is, and this is not part of my real subject, but my belief is that what physics deals with is a limiting case of, in a similar sense, as microscopic physics was a limiting case of many particles, as classical mechanics was a limiting case when light didn't play a role. Similarly, present physics is a limiting case when life doesn't play a role. If we try to formulate the laws of quantum mechanics logically and consistently, as we now understand the laws of quantum mechanics, and quantum mechanics is sort of the present basis of the physical sciences, we would have to say that quantum mechanics gives probability connections between subsequent observations, between subsequent contents of the consciousness. Now, of course, that we take the primitive thing to be something different from our real subject is not new. We observe also the stars and Newton's laws we verify by looking at the planets and by getting the information through the light which comes from the planets. And this is not new, this fact that we introduce as a basic concept something different. Mathematics, perhaps I shouldn't say this, mathematicians, when they tried to axiomatize mathematics, said the integer numbers are the obvious basis because I can have 3 pieces of matches or 5 pieces of matches, and this is different. In other words, the basic idea for them was objects, the objects of physics. Similarly, now, physics' basic object is the consciousness, the content of my consciousness. But just as it is unreasonable to disregard the properties of light, which bring us the information of the planets, similarly, I feel it is not reasonable to say the consciousness is something given, because it evidently has many, many properties and many characteristics which we don't know, and the concept of physics of consciousness is a ridiculously simplified concept and idealized to an extent which is in a sense meaningless. Now, to extend science to a new area will not be easy. But we should try to think of it nevertheless. It will not be easy, just it was not easy to specify the problems of physics before Galileo and Newton's accomplishments. Since then, however, we can identify many problems. If I could enumerate 15 problems of physics very easily, and it is more attractive and easier to work on recognized problems than to lay the foundations. To put it in another way, and the way the economists put it, physics and the science of inanimate nature has taken off. That is the expression of the economists. Psychology and the knowledge of the human mind, important as it is, has not taken off, and it will be very difficult to make it take off, just as it was very difficult to make physics take off. Perhaps the fact that progress in physics proper has become less far-reaching and also more difficult to achieve will, as it should, divert attention into the area which I am advocating now, to the unexplored problems of life. Well, this is I came to this conclusion by talking about the terrible concentration of efforts to certain areas of physics. The question is then, would such a diversion of our interest also help restoring the usefulness of science for society at large? Well, I think it could and surely should have such an effect. Science, as we now know it, has made life possible for many more people than it was possible before, and made it easier for all of us. It has not contributed to individual happiness as much as we wish it would. In fact, the concept of happiness does not exist in present-day science. We don't care for it. It's not part of science. The extension of the interest of science, which I am thinking of, would eventually concern itself also with spiritual problems, including the problems and nature of enjoyment, and perhaps ultimately also with the problems of happiness, if I dare to use this word in connection with science, and this is a certain boldness, because we are used to say science has nothing to do with it. But maybe it should. The extension of the area of science to other area would have a more direct effect also. It would make it possible for more people, for people whose principal occupation is different, to participate in its development. The effort needed to penetrate to the boundaries of our understanding of spiritual problems is very much smaller than the effort to penetrate to the problems of the quarks of particle physics and to the problems of renormalization and other problems of other very difficult problems of physics. More people and people whose principal occupation is not science could participate in this effort, and this should divert many of us from the quest for power and influence, which are the most natural and most obvious goals now. Perhaps I might mention that a few weeks ago I visited another college, Boulder, University of Colorado in Boulder. And there a young man came to me and said, you know, I can give you his name, Wiss. You know, he said, I don't feel happy in science. I think I will go back to the occupation of my parents, who were farmers. I won't abandon physics entirely, but I will do it as an avocation, as Einstein's avocation was physics for the time that he was a member of the patent office of Switzerland, and as it was my avocation when I worked in a leather tannery and devoted the evenings to physics and science. And I enjoyed it, and I am sure Einstein enjoyed it, and this is a possibility that science could be an avocation giving pleasure to many, as occupation with sports and horse races does now. A few days ago, I read Oppenheimer's talk, which he gave 10 years ago when the library of the American Institute of Physics was inaugurated. And he quotes in this in speech the ideas of a Russian scientist. He doesn't give the name. He said that what will be science 50 years from now? And without a moment's hesitation, he said, everybody will be a scientist. This rattled around the room for a few minutes. I am reading Oppenheimer's speech. This rattled around the room for a few minutes until our colleague realized that it wasn't true. Well, I hope it was true. Then he said, no, there would be no work really, but everyone will be engaged in creative activity. That also did not sound exactly right, so finally he smiled and said very broadly, "Of course, there will always be people who are interested in sports, but science could compete in interest with sports, could be an evocation for many people, and could give interest, happiness, cooperation, joint striving for many people, and replace the interest, the desire for doing something, for influence, which is so prevalent in the human mind." Well, this may be a good opportunity to return to the recollections of the earlier status of science, to the favorable aspects of which we should try to recapture. In earlier days, the days which another friend of mine calls the golden age of science, the competition was less severe, partly because the temptation to become a scientist was smaller. It implied to some degree monastic life. As a result, there were fewer people working in each area, and the newcomers were greeted with pleasure. Also, science was more nearly a joint enterprise. The lower pressure for quick accomplishments overcompensated the effects of greater diversification, and science was more, at least physics, was a great deal more diversified in earlier days than, well, about 30 years ago than it is now. Perhaps I should also mention that it is more diversified in large parts of Europe than it is in our country. Also, science was, well, I believe these advantages, namely the lower pressure for quick accomplishments and the greater diversification, could be recaptured by spreading out the area of our subject, and also by many people pursuing science as a sideline, not as their main adventure leading to power and fame. It may be true that science in the fields now recognized has taken off, in these areas it would progress probably less rapidly than it progresses now, but the rapid progress in these areas has become less of a necessity. Also, Einstein's example, who did his most important work as a sideline when, as I mentioned, he was working in the patent office, this shows that progress remains possible even if it is pursued as a sideline, practiced by people who, to use his words, do not have to lay a golden egg every day. A less professional approach to science would also enable us to remain in closer touch with other human accomplishments, with the wonderful accomplishments of our poets and writers who probed intuitively into the secrets of our minds, into the secrets of our consciousness, into the areas which I hope will be incorporated into the area of science. The psychologist whom I admire most, Sigmund Freud, acknowledges in his writings his great indebtedness to the writers of the past century. And the diversification and the less professional approach to science could greatly contribute to the benefit which the pursuits of science could bring to an increasing number of our fellow men, and thus become increasingly important and increasingly beneficial for all of us men. Thank you very much.
Professor Vignes said that they would be willing to entertain questions for a few moments. Gabor?
I'd like to ask a question that you mentioned it now, and you also mentioned it in your writings before. You feel there is a relationship between quantum mechanics and consciousness. But could you elaborate why you believe that there is a connection there?
But what does quantum mechanics do ultimately? In this probability, quantum mechanics ultimately gives probability connections between subsequent observations. And this is the most objective description of quantum mechanics. Because you see, the wave function and the concepts which we use in our everyday work on quantum mechanics are auxiliary concepts. The equations of quantum mechanics are causal equations. The effect of them is probability laws. Now, causal equations do not describe probability laws. The fundamental things are the probability laws. And probabilities of what? Between results of observation. The result of observation is what enters my consciousness. I mean, I pray this is a little abstract, but, and if you contradicted me, I think I could make it better, more clear, and better, I could articulate it probably better. But perhaps, Dick, you can say something.
Well, Professor Wigner has certainly said it very well. Maybe that we make a contrast with the situation in pre-quantum physics, in which there were causal laws which predicted individual events, and we did not have to go to observation to find individual events. However, in quantum theory, as Professor Wigner says, the formal structure of quantum mechanics does not tell us anything about individual events. It gives us a very nice set of causal relationships between state functions or psi functions, but only observation, nothing, all the mathematics, all the computers, none of them will tell us where we will find an individual event, when we will find it.
This method says a lot about quantum mechanics, but nothing about consciousness.
Right, and that is the trouble. That is the trouble. You see, quantum mechanics' basis is the observation. That is a primitive concept. Just as in classical, in Newtonian physics, the position of the planets was to be described, but it came to us via light. And Newtonian mechanics didn't say anything about light. But it came to us through the light, the direct observation, the ultimate thing was the arrival of light at our eyes or whatnot. Similarly, the ultimate thing in quantum mechanics is the content of our observation, but quantum mechanics does not say anything about consciousness. That is why I feel we should try to go a little bit and know a little bit more about consciousness than we know.
But maybe I misunderstood you, because my understanding was that you thought there was a relationship between quantum mechanics and consciousness. Now, on the basis of what you say now, I understand that you consider consciousness a completely separate problem from quantum mechanics.
In the same sense, separate as light is separate from the observation of planets. You see, we would not know the laws of quantum mechanics would have no meaning without referring to the content of consciousness.
That is true, but yes. Whatever we observe that comes into our mind probably gets amplified above quantum levels in the eye and through the optical and so on if we take visual observations. So therefore, whatever happens in the mind is not necessarily governed by quantum mechanical laws. I don't know whether you ever meant that it was governed or not.
You see, excuse me, this is for me very interesting, because you see the things which I am also trying to say. Evidently, consciousness is not governed by quantum mechanics, just as light is not governed by Newtonian physics. We have to extend it. And similarly, we have to extend present-day physics to, if we want it to refer, and if we want to learn more, and as a common word goes, to understand better, whatever that word means. The real fundamental thing of our, which, in terms of which quantum mechanics is formed, whether this will be possible on the basis of present quantum mechanics, present physics, I doubt it very strongly. But even if it were possible, it would need a translation. You see, possibly, with the present-day physics, you can describe the atoms and molecules in my brain. But whether a certain situation in my brain causes pressure to me or pain, that needs at least a translation. More probably, it needs a fundamental change of the laws. Is this in agreement with what you wanted to say?
Well, I think I understand the point, though. So, because my understanding was that you thought that fundamentally the brain was governed by quantum mechanical laws. I thought that.
No, excuse me. Then, if I gave that impression, I spoke very unclearly and very misleading, but very much conveying an information which I did not want to convey.
Thank you.
Another question. A lot of semi-amateur scientists that sort of pursuing science as a hobby. This is lovely for when you can do theory, but how could you, for example, where at this little, like, huge particle accelerator out in Illinois, where would you get funds for such things? You could get a bunch of amateurs together to get $1.25 at their local club tonight.
You are absolutely right. Many parts of science would progress less rapidly than they progress now. Now, I am firmly convinced that it will be possible to accomplish experiments in every area with less of an effort. If we compare the difficulty which were present when I was your age to make a vacuum chamber, with the ease with which a vacuum chamber is made now, it is simply ridiculous. Similarly, I hope that high energy particles, that the creation, that the production of high energy particles will be easier. It is true that we worked awful hard to make a vacuum and expended not so much money, but an enormous amount of energy to keep the vacuum good. But maybe these very large expenditures, which are motivated by our desire to obtain the laws of what you call elementary particles or whatever you call it, so quickly, maybe that is not absolutely necessary.
You have cosmic rays going through us.
Yes.
Every second.
That's right. That's right.
Are there other? Let me take one more question.
Two more.
Or two more.
You know, there is one point here which I would like to mention, which may not be an answer to your question, which I am not sure that I fully appreciate, the meaning of which I fully appreciate it. When Galileo wanted to study the laws of free fall, he did not take the case in which the free fall was very slow. He did not use a piece of paper which falls very slowly, but he used a rock which fell very fast. Similarly, I think if we want to understand the functioning of life, we should not study principally or almost exclusively those situations in which life is on the borderline of not life, namely the life of microbes. But we should study, as Freud did, the functioning of where it is massive, the functioning of the human mind or the mind of more highly developed animals. I see that this makes some people unhappy, but yes, I see. But, and you may be right, but I may be right also.
You could play that one either way. I didn't know which one you were going to take, Barney.
As a biophysicist, it delights me to hear you suggest that physicists ought to come over into the life sciences, and I heartily concur. But I think that it's possible that this may exacerbate some of the situations in society. For example, we have a fairly large interest right now in the problems of aging in biology and an approach of the physicist to this. Now, suppose we did, in some way, have an effect upon the ability to slow down the aging process. The social implications of this have values which are really beyond us in coping with it.
You are absolutely right. And all development of science, and quite possibly I wholeheartedly agree with you, and particularly possibly the development of the psychological sciences may bring tremendous dangers. I fully agree with you. The development of the atomic bombs is said to have brought tremendous dangers. But the atomic bomb cannot be made in my own basement. And it is an enterprise which is very difficult to carry out without a very obvious concerted effort. Now, this is not true of a psychological invention. And you mentioned one, but of course, the possibility of psychological inventions which would have deleterious effects on our society is very great and very true. And how we will cope with this, whether this will not present a great danger, I don't know. I should probably have expanded on this a little, not a little, but a great deal more than I did. And I don't know, but I would be willing to take the risk and hope for the goodwill of people like yourself and of psychologists.
Bill, do you have a short question?
No.
If it has a short answer. All right, but this will have to be the last one.
Arguments against the point of view that existence and our perception thereof might just be one large bootstrap, so to speak, with existing quantum mechanics. Are there arguments?
What is a bootstrap? What do you mean by bootstrap? You know, it's used in physics in a certain sense, but I don't think you mean it that way. But how do you mean it, bootstrap? Another concept, just as to comprehend the propagation of light, I needed new concepts. To understand microscopic physics, I needed new concepts. Similarly, I think if I want to understand, if I want to know more about consciousness, if I want to get to interesting conclusions or interesting information about consciousness, I will need new concepts, new basic ideas, just as I needed the field concept in one case, the Hilbert space in the other case. And I think, does this have anything to do with your question?
Yes, you have history on your side.
That's something. Thank you very much.
If anyone else wants to come afterwards, I'm sure we will have a few moments. I'd like to thank Professor Vigner and thank Louisiana State University for letting you come up here to be with us.
Thank you very much.